from DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
The build-up to National Signing Day is intense. We knew it would be. We're going to do our part to cover it all over the course of the next few minutes here, and we're glad to have you on the program today. Jaden Hazelwood coming up. After all, I think that some of y'all would just probably drive off the road if I didn't at least mention Jaden Hazelwood for a few minutes in every show. I know you got to fill out your Dog Nation Daily Bingo card, so we'll do our Jaden Hazelwood talk in just a minute so you can fill in that square on your game card. But before we get to Jaden Hazelwood, I want to start with another five-star prospect who's potentially on the board for Georgia here heading towards December 19th and the beginning of the early signing period of the 2019 class. I want to talk about five-star running back Trey Sanders. And I know, I guess we've mentioned Sanders now in a few straight shows as well. I talked about him yesterday, talked about him going back to Friday. Sanders has been on our mind a lot as of late. And as a way of furthering that conversation today, I'm going to do something pretty dangerous. I'm going to attempt to decipher Instagram. Now, I am 41 going on 95. Like, I am like the oldest 41-year-old in the world. I don't always read the Instagram stuff as well. It's a little bit like deciphering hieroglyphics for me, but there was an image that did catch my attention of Trey Sanders on Instagram. If you're watching on video, I'll show this to you. If you're listening, I'll do my part to try to explain this. This is an Instagram story. All right, so let me see if I can get some help with this. So this is a question that someone asked Trey Sanders on Instagram, and he basically threw that on there. This is him just sort of creating this on his own. All right, so one way or another, this is him creating on his own. It says, it's Sanders wearing his Georgia jersey, going back to his visit over the weekend. It says, ask some questions. Will Trey Sanders be in a Georgia unit next year? I'm assuming unit means uniform. Will he be in a Georgia unit next year? And then down at the bottom of this image on Instagram, it says, I think so. So Trey Sanders kind of throwing that out there for Georgia on Instagram. And obviously, this is like, you know, the sort of second consecutive day that we've seen some of this stuff from Sanders on social media as of late, kind of talking about Georgia, kind of showing some love there when it comes to this kind of stuff. And as Jeff Sintel has explained in the past, that even though Georgia spent a lot of time recruiting a guy like John Emery Jr., and even though Georgia spent a lot of time, you know, maybe not being publicly connected to Sanders, there are some reasons why Sanders might indeed be in Georgia's plans and why Georgia might indeed be in Sanders' plans. Let me let you hear a little bit of Jeff Sintel once again as a reminder of maybe why this relationship is blossoming here late in the process. Here is Jeff Sintel on Trey Sanders.
I've kind of always felt that Sanders was going to end up at either Georgia or Alabama. It's just the running back pedigree, the line, he gets all that. He was very comfy and cozy at G-Day with a lot of other folks. Here's where I think things got off track with Georgia, is when Georgia took John Emery, he started looking elsewhere. Now there's the moments here that are showing up where, oh, Elijah Holyfield, is he likely to go pro? What about Brian Herrien? Then all of a sudden, Trey Sanders sees that Georgia is not betrothed to anybody yet, especially not an elite back. And that gets Georgia more interesting.
So Jeff says the absence of a couple running backs from this year's roster, potentially the 2018, or I should say the 2019 roster, could make an impact for Georgia there. But that's not the only reason, Jeff thinks. And by the way, we'll hear more from Jeff Sintel later on today on Before the Hedges. But that's not the only reason why Jeff Sintel thinks that Trey Sanders could be attracted to UGA. Here's another reminder from Jeff about what all of this could be about.
Mike Locksley was the lead recruiter on both Evan Neal and Trey Sanders. Of course, Locksley's now on his way to Maryland, and I think that also opens up a lot of things.
So Mike Locksley, now the Maryland head coach, was the Alabama offensive coordinator. That's a guy that was recruiting Trey Sanders hard. Him not being there anymore maybe makes Jeff Sintel think that Trey Sanders may take a second look, a more critical look, at Alabama and all of a sudden not be quite as attracted to the Crimson Tide. And it's also worth pointing out that Florida is in the mix here, too. Sanders is expected to be at Florida this weekend, but I think most Georgia fans would say when it comes to being fearful of a competitor, more reason to be feeling that way about Alabama than Florida. No disrespect, but let's face it, Georgia fans think they can win head-to-head recruiting battles against Dan Mullen and the Gators. But as far as the Alabama part of this goes, one more reason why Jeff Sintel thinks there's at least a chance that Trey Sanders may not be quite as attracted to the Crimson Tide as he was once believed to be. Here's Jeff Sintel again.
Alabama, I don't know if you noticed or not, but they kind of win games right now more throwing the ball around to Tua Tagovailoa and his five-star magic show of five-star receivers. Alabama's probably not seen as the place to run the rock and to enhance your stock for the NFL as it used to be.
So, quick recap here. You got five-star running back Trey Sanders on the board as an uncommitted prospect, likely choosing between Georgia, where he just visited, Florida, where he's going to visit this weekend. But Alabama has been thought to be the favorite there for a while. But the guy that was recruiting to Alabama is no longer there. Alabama's a little bit more of a pass-happy offense as of late. And Georgia has proven itself to once again be a great springboard for running backs. Just look at the success that Elijah Holyfield and DeAndre Swift enjoyed this week, you know, this past season. And, oh yeah, by the way, there's a possibility that some playing time opens up at Georgia, at least based on the chances that Elijah Holyfield could at least consider the NFL. Those are the reasons why Georgia fans are getting a little more optimistic here. Now, to add to all of this, Nick Saban has been recently seen on the recruiting trail, recruiting another running back. DeAndre Glass is a running back at Katy, Texas, nowhere near a prospect of the caliber of Trey Sanders, a good player, but not the same caliber prospect. And DeAndre Glass recently tweets out a picture of himself standing there with Nick Saban. Had a great visit today with Coach Saban. DeAndre Glass says, roll tide. So obviously people who follow recruiting closely say, well, if Alabama thought it wasn't going to get Trey Sanders, that's exactly what they would be doing. Nick Saban will be going out visiting with another running back. It's also worth pointing out that Georgia has spent some time with a lot of running backs itself as well over the course of the last few weeks, so sometimes that kind of stuff can be false positives. I guess to wrap up all of this portion of the conversation, though, there's an element of me that was a little more excited about Sanders before he started showing all this social media love. What's the line from Shakespeare about thou dost protesteth a bit too much? Whatever the opposite of that is, I feel like this may be going on with Sanders. This is almost a little too much love for Georgia. We do see a degree of trolling from time to time in social media. I think it's good natured. I don't think recruits mean anything ill, you know, ill will by it all. I just think that's their way of having fun and their way of sort of being fascinated by the attention their messages generate. There's an element of this for me that almost feels like it's going too far in the direction of showing the Georgia love, and maybe there's a swerve coming at the other end. I don't know. I do know this is a player that Georgia really needs. It'd be a great way to take a player from Alabama and add to Georgia's impressive haul for 2019. This is like a lot of those five-star names are still on the board, though. There is a lot left to be decided on this, and we will just have to wait and see, but it's at least interesting that a Trey Sanders has had Georgia on his mind so much on social media as of late. Let me transition, though, and talk about another five-star prospect. That's Jaden Hazelwood, a guy that we have talked about a lot and was a part of a thrilling moment yesterday in Mercedes-Benz Stadium as his Cedar Grove team beat a very good Peach County team in the state championship game and did so in thrilling fashion. Once again, if you're watching on video, and I don't typically like to do things that only translate on video, but I do want to give you a chance to see the game-winning touchdown that Jaden Hazelwood caught yesterday as captured by our buddy Jeff Sintel, who was there in the building in Connor Raleigh, I guess. They're working on this as well. Actually, Connor, did you shoot this or did Jeff? Yeah, Connor Raleigh shot this. So take a look at this on video, and I'll kind of describe it for you. As Hazelwood there with the game on the line gets a chance to beat single coverage, come away with the touchdown pass, and putting the Saints in the win column for state championship game. An incredible moment for him catching that touchdown and then really putting this game on the map in terms of one of the best games of the season, one of the great moments there for a Cedar Grove team beating Peach County, which has been a dominant program, just a terrific moment. Then after that, Hazelwood kind of discusses his top five a little bit. Now, if you'd been watching the game, you also saw some of that, too, from him with those logos all over his shoe. He would then tweet about that later on, talking about those top five schools that do include Georgia and a lot of those other schools that we've kind of mentioned from time to time. Oklahoma, where he visited last spring. Florida State, which we've discussed as of late. Miami, of course. And then the University of Tennessee. There has been a lot of that lately when it comes to Hazelwood for all those schools, and those now do officially become his top five. And for some Georgia fans, this part of the discussion kind of veers back in that territory of excessively dramatic, a little more than some Georgia fans want. But when you see Hazelwood do what he does in terms of that state championship there, you really understand, why this is a guy that gets as much attention as he does. He is clearly a player that is worth the hype and is worthy of that attention. There's no doubt about that. And obviously a lot of Georgia fans are plugged in and watching closely to see if Hazelwood indeed is going to choose Georgia when he makes his announcement there in early January at the All-Star game, kind of post-early signing day. That that's certainly going to be something very interesting to see. We'll obviously talk to Jeff Sintel more about this later on, but it is important to remember, you know, kind of where this process has been for Jaden Hazelwood. I mean, he's discussed this a lot as of late. Georgia there among his top five. Obviously, Dog fans hope that they do get the nod. Here is what he said most recently about Georgia when he spoke to our Jeff Sintel back in November. Here's Hazelwood again on the Georgia offense and the evolution that it showed over the last part of the 2018 regular season.
Have you been paying attention to the state school throwing the ball around a little more? How do you feel about what Georgia's doing? How do you feel about that?
Yeah, they've been throwing it a little bit more. I ain't really been watching them, but I've been seeing stuff on Twitter. So that's really it.
What about Justin? Did you see his highlights?
He threw a bomb to Miko, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen that.
What's left for you and them? What do you need to see? What, like, if you were going to take the official this weekend, what would that have done for you?
I
want to
see how everybody getting used. Everybody got a way of being used, so I'm trying to see, compare myself to see what they have and see how you're getting used.
The bomb to Meikle that he's referencing there was the UMass game that Justin Fields threw the pass to McCall Hardman. And obviously, it's easy to understand that that Hazelwood wants to be the place that's going to really use him. And maybe the passing attack he saw from Georgia over the last few weeks of the season will give him, you know, that inclination about UGA. I think, though, that when you see the shoes in the top five, I think it's easy to believe what Hazelwood also told Jeff Sintel a couple weeks ago, that as it stands right now, he really does not know what it is that he wants to do with his final college decision. Here is Hazelwood emphasizing that point once again.
Question everybody wants to know. Describe where you're at. Just what do you think? Is this
clueless right now?
Clueless, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think it becomes very easy to believe Hazelwood when he says that, and this is going to be a fun story to watch the rest of the way. The Trey Sanders story is going to be a fun story to watch the rest of the way. Nakobe Dean, some of these other uncommitted five stars. As I've been saying, let's just get buckled up here for a wild ride. Georgia trying to build another elite class, and some of these remaining uncommitted five-star names will really hold the key to just how successful this signing day turns out to be for UGA. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Hello to you. Thank you for being with us live on video today, 10 a.m. Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter feed. We're also on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Rep and in podcast form, wherever podcasts can be found. It's all brought to you by Marco's Pizza. And you know, at Marco's, Primo is always on the menu. It's dough made fresh. It's a sauce from the original Gianmarco family recipe, and it's three signature cheeses on every pizza. You can order yours today from Marco's.com. We really appreciate Marco's Pizza being a part of our program here today. We also appreciate our buddy Mike Griffith from Dog Nation being on the show today, too. We'll get him coming up in a couple of minutes. Before that, though, I want to go around the doghouse, presented here on this Wednesday by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. And I actually want to turn my attention away from recruiting here for a couple of minutes, because I thought there was something really interesting at USAtoday.com the other day. Paul Meyerberg, longtime college football writer there for USA Today, was looking at his Heisman favorites for 2019. I'm going to talk to Mike Griffith about this in just a moment, but I wanted to spend some time with it on around the doghouse before we got to that. Meyerberg was looking at his top 10 Heisman candidates for 2019, and as you might imagine, Georgia's represented on this list, but not specifically. The entity that gets mentioned from Georgia as a Heisman candidate for next season, he just simply put Georgia starting quarterback. Didn't specify between Jake Fromm and Justin Fields. Let me show you the quote here from Paul Meyerberg explaining why he doesn't specify between Fromm and Fields. He says, maybe it's a cop-out not to go ahead and slot Jake Fromm in, who was wildly overshadowed by Tua Tagovailoa and Kyler Murray and Dwayne Haskins during a regular season that was a strong follow-up to a successful freshman campaign. But Paul Meyerberg says, you never know. Georgia could flip its offensive mindset and go with a sophomore-to-be Justin Fields in an effort to be a more dynamic offense under center. Meyerberg then says, either way, Georgia's starting quarterback is going to be in the thick of the Heisman conversation. I don't disagree with that last sentiment. I do believe that Georgia's quarterback in 2019 will be in the thick of the Heisman conversation. I guess where I am now, though, and what makes me different apparently than Paul Meyerberg, and I'll ask Mike Griffith about this in a moment, I'll give you a chance to weigh in on this today as well. I am no longer of the mindset that, hey, this is a quarterback job. It's up for grabs in 2019. I think that Jake Fromm earned the starting job for next season with the way that he played against Alabama two Saturdays ago. And that doesn't mean that I don't want to see at times more of Justin Fields in more traditional roles next year than we saw in 2018, assuming that Fields chooses to stay. And I guess I think there's a better chance than not that Fields will, despite the fact that Fields was noncommittal with us about that a couple of weeks ago. But I think that Jake Fromm played maybe the best game he's ever played against the best defense he's ever seen. And what more would you need to see from him to validate his claim as being the Georgia starting quarterback? So as we head towards an offseason where we'll talk about this kind of stuff a lot, I'm prepared to talk about this moving forward with Fromm more solidly in control of this starting job than he's ever been before. I think his play spoke volumes with how he performed against Alabama the other day. And from that standpoint, I think that Paul Meyerberg gets it wrong when he doesn't specify between starting quarterbacks in his Heisman look ahead for 2019. Justin Fields, I think, is still a dazzling prospect. He's going to have a very good career at Georgia. But for next season, the starting job, I think more solidly than ever, belongs to a Georgia quarterback, Jake Fromm. All right, it's Around the Doghouse, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. You know what they do. They provide foundation repair, basement waterproofing, and crawl space encapsulation. They also offer a lifetime of support. So check them out by giving them a call at 678-ESOG now. That number once again, 678-ESOG now, and have one of their qualified professional technicians come over to your home and check your cracked foundation or your wet basement or your damp crawl space. It's the only foundation repair company the Dog Nation would trust because it's the only one with a full-time engineer on staff. So give them a call at 678-ESOG now. All right, great to have you with us here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza, and hope you enjoy Mike Griffith right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Let me bring in our buddy Mike Griffith here onto the conversation here on Dog Nation Daily. Mike, first of all, really appreciate you being with us. And just before you joined us, I was talking about something that Paul Meyerberg wrote at USAtoday.com, and he was looking at his 10 Heisman Trophy favorites for 2019. And for Georgia, Mike, Paul mentions only the Georgia starting quarterback. He kind of, you know, doesn't separate Fromm from Fields, doesn't distinguish one over the other, basically leaving the door open that Fields may beat out Jake Fromm. And while I guess you'd never say never about anything, my point here is when you look at the way that Jake played against Alabama in the SEC championship, I think that Fromm made a real statement about his, you know, his skills, his performance, and I think that he starts 2019 more solidly in control of the starting quarterback job than he probably started 2018 with, just given the fact that he played his best against the best defense that he's seen. Where do you land on that conversation?
So I think right now that's logical. I mean, you know, based on what we saw against Alabama, I mean, it all makes sense to me, BA, but I guess I would say let's see what happens in the Sugar Bowl. And if I had to put my money on anybody, I would put it on DeAndre Swift. To me, DeAndre was playing as good as anybody in the country the last month of the season, and he told us he wasn't completely healthy, so even after the bye week. So let's just imagine DeAndre Swift being even better next year. I think the offensive line will be better. I think the passing game will be better. I think DeAndre Swift is probably my best bet for a Georgia Heisman winner. But to your point, I agree. Here's the problem. Perception overtakes reality. And college football has rejected Georgia and has a serious case of SEC fatigue. It's as simple as that. For this committee to overlook an Oklahoma team that finished the regular season last in their league in defense and put them in ahead of Georgia, that was one clue. But then for Tua not to win the Heisman Trophy and for people to overlook an entire season's worth of work and what was the most prolific quarterback in Alabama history on the most dominant team in SEC history, and to overlook that for a PlayStation offense that managed only 3 touchdowns in regulation against Army, that tells me that it's the what have you done for me now society. So while you and I can sit here and digest what Jake did, certainly in all SEC year, if I ever saw one, and yet there was only one Georgia player that made the AP first team all SEC. But to the point, people aren't ready for Georgia. People are tired of the SEC. So they can put whoever they want from Georgia or whoever they want from the SEC. But if a team doesn't go through the season and slam dunk win it, if a guy like Tua can get overlooked for the Heisman, if a team like Oklahoma can slip in the playoffs ahead of Georgia, I'm not ready to make any assumptions at this point.
Well, I think you bring up some interesting points, and let me try to separate a couple issues here. First of all, you talk about, you know, and true, like, Heisman, you know, candidacies type stuff. I do think you're right. There's a chance that DeAndre Swift emerges as Georgia's true Heisman candidate for 2019. But I was more looking at the Heisman candidacy piece from USA Today as a window into the national view on the Georgia starting quarterback position. And regardless of whether or not Fromm becomes a true Heisman candidate next season or not, I do think he is more solidly Georgia's starting quarterback now than he was a few weeks ago or certainly a couple of months ago. Do you agree with that part, that against Alabama, Fromm proved that he is the Georgia starting quarterback regardless of Justin Fields' status?
I thought he proved it last year, Brandon. I thought winning that shootout against Baker Mayfield in Oklahoma and coming from behind against Notre Dame and doing all that as a true freshman, and I thought he proved it all year, and I thought he proved it last year. But the reality, I think, is as long as Justin Fields is on this roster and as long as Kirby Smart is the head coach, he's going to leave every position open for competition. And I can't be a fortune teller and tell you what's going to happen in the Sugar Bowl. I think Georgia's going to play really well. I think Georgia's going to beat Texas. I think Jake Fromm will perform well. But Justin Fields has been making gains all year, and I don't know what he'll do with his opportunity. Hopefully we won't see him in the fake punt formation anytime soon. I don't know what he'll do under center. So while I would agree with you that as things stand right now, I'm not ready to make the leap to say what it's going to be like come September. There's a long time between now and then. Both of these quarterbacks are getting better, both of them. Jake got better this year. I thought Jake performed extremely well, as you pointed out, against Alabama. He looked great. But I can't tell you where Justin Fields is going to be after the spring session.
Sure.
He may pick things up quickly also.
Yeah, you may be right about that. I guess when you want to look ahead of the immediate future in the Sugar Bowl, I think it would be nonsensical, just to kind of follow up on this topic before we start transitioning and talking more fully about the Sugar Bowl, I think it would be nonsensical to see Fields play more against Texas, even though to a certain extent it's kind of a glorified exhibition, to see him play more against Texas than he has in other games this season, given the fact that Fromm did play so well against Alabama, and given the fact that by, you know, DeAndre Baker's decision to return, it seems like George wants to take this game seriously. I mean, I think taking the game seriously means seeing the majority of the snaps given to Jake Fromm, given the momentum that he seems to have coming off the Alabama game, or would you land on an idea like that?
Yeah, I agree. I agree completely. And I think this is more than an exhibition, okay? We've seen how this committee works. They're willing to use every little thing they can, okay? Kirby was right when he said it's going to be different every year. Nobody's bringing up the fact, by the way, that Georgia beat Oklahoma and Notre Dame last year. Nobody's bringing those games up. But, Brandon, I'll bet you anything that if Georgia were to slip up and lose this game against Texas, and we end up in this situation next year with two SEC games, people would point back and say, oh, look right there.
Yeah.
Big 12 beat the SEC. They really weren't. Oklahoma beat Texas, but Georgia didn't. They will use – this is where it's at. I'm telling you, I can see it. And USA Today does not speak for me. Nancy Armour, their columnist, she wrote that Jim Harbaugh owned college football 2 years ago. Embarrassing. Then she called out Urban Meyer as a bad person 2 weeks ago. I don't know if she's ever met the man. But that does not speak for me. Everybody has their own opinions. I respect them. I don't think they're going to speak for me or you. It's an interesting article, and they have quite a platform. But I don't lend a whole lot of stock necessarily to one organization these days. There's too many things. There's too many agendas out there. And what I'm seeing is an anti-SEC agenda right now and SEC fatigue. And people are tired of it. And I get it. If television networks, look, you know, you throw two SEC teams in there, you're losing a market. It comes down to dollars and cents. If you want to know the answer to some questions that don't make sense, follow the bouncing ball. It'll lead you to the dollar, almighty dollar.
Sure.
And right now, the SEC has gotten too big and too powerful, and college football risks losing the entire West Coast and, you know, west of the Mississippi. So I don't put a whole lot of stock into logic or rationale right now. I think people have agendas. I think Georgia needs to win this game, Brandon. I think this Sugar Bowl is the beginning of next season for Georgia.
Mike, I actually really like that talking point. I think that's a really interesting thing to say. And what it reminds me of is I'm a big golf fan. I don't know if you like golf or not, but you know, in the PGA Tour, they have what's known as the wraparound season, so that the 2019 season actually begins before 2018 ends. The tournaments that take place right now are wraparound tournaments. And this is kind of your point about the Sugar Bowl, too. It's sort of the wraparound season for college football of, hey, the first game of the 2019 season is actually on January 1st to close at the 2018 season against Texas in the Sugar Bowl. Because I do think you make a lot of very valid points that no matter what the selection committee may say about, you know, every year being its own entity and evaluated only within the framework of that year, perception is reality. And perception to a large degree is formed by a lot of what happens in games like this. So I actually really hope that Georgia approaches this game in a very similar fashion to the way that you just described it, as something that really sets the stage for a much bigger and better year for Georgia in 2019. I think that's a really fascinating point, Mike, and I'd really like to see Georgia kind of go out and demonstrate exactly that when it plays in New Orleans on January 1st.
Now, here's a quick history lesson, BA. 15 years ago, okay? 15 years ago, 14 years ago, an undefeated, it was very similar to where we're at right now, SEC fatigue. Undefeated Auburn in 2004. I don't know if you remember that team with Carmel sure. Cadillac Williams and Ronnie Brown. They went undefeated, and they did not make the championship game. Oklahoma and USC were selected for that game. And one of the reasons for logic was that Auburn had lost at home to USC the year before. The other reason was schedule strength. Now, I do think Georgia, by playing Notre Dame next season, I don't think that schedule strength is going to be an issue. Now, there's some hidden stink bombs in next season, BA, I'm going to tell you. And when I wrote the story halfway through the year when the schedule was released, a lot of people rolled their eyes and shrugged their shoulders. But if I'm not mistaken, there's about four or five teams that have 5 weeks before they play Georgia next year. And Georgia only has one situation like that, and that's against Florida, I believe. And Florida also has a bye week. Georgia has an extremely difficult schedule. But getting back to the point here, transitive properties are used, whether they will publicly state that or not. Whether they're convenient or not, they are. It's in your mind, okay? We all remember the last time a team played a team. We all remember the last time Team A played Team B. It resonates with us. We remember, oh, Georgia, Oklahoma, yeah, Georgia's better. They beat them last year, right? That's what we think. Why wouldn't they beat them again this year? Well, we won't find out because the committee, you know, had their agenda, whatever. So I think this game is very important for Georgia, because it could be another one-loss Georgia team we're talking about. We don't know the circumstances next year. I think next year's Georgia team could be the best in the SEC. Certainly, if not Alabama, then Georgia. I think they could be in a very similar situation, only maybe have one loss. We could be having the same discussion, and it could be a one-loss Texas that just won the Big 12 against a one-loss Georgia that just lost to Alabama in the SEC title game. And you know darn well they will reflect back on this game. It will happen.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that, Mike. I think it's a really fascinating thing to think about. And I guess I would add to that the fact that DeAndre Baker is playing in the game. I do think that it helps Georgia, and I've talked to Chip Towers about this. I've talked to everybody about this. Baker's decision, I think, really helps Georgia here. And, you know, I don't know that I would fault him if he made a different decision. Obviously, you know, business is business, and, you know, certain players are going to make a different choice when it comes to that kind of stuff. But I am selfish. I do want what's best for Georgia, and I think Baker playing helps Georgia, not just because he's on the field, but because I think that he really sets the pace for the focus of the rest of the roster as well. So if you and I are in agreement that Georgia's 2019 campaign is kind of kick-started by what happens in the Sugar Bowl, DeAndre Baker's presence there is pretty valuable, correct?
I absolutely agree with that. You know, and I think it shows a lot of buy-in. I think it says a lot about Georgia and what they did for DeAndre Baker. He came in as a three-star, and I think Kirby and Mel did a great job developing. He's all in on the program. I think it says a lot about the buy-in that we've seen from Georgia all year. And I guess that's, you know, people are asking me, you know, wow, you know, earlier this year, you know, you were down on Georgia. Well, earlier this year, they weren't playing as well as they were at the end of the year, BA, but I saw a team that was bought in every week. Every week, these guys stay focused. We talked about it on the show. There weren't any off-the-field issues this year. That's not an accident, okay? That's guys policing themselves. That's guys putting the better of the team ahead of themselves. That's why they didn't make selfish, stupid decisions, because they all had a common goal that was bigger than the individual. That takes a huge amount of buy-in. It's very unique. It's really unfortunate that this team didn't get what I feel like they worked for under the criteria of being one of the four best. That bothers me, just like Tua not winning the Heisman bothers me, because I think that was wrong. I know what my eyes saw. I've been watching college football for a long time. I think Tua made it look too easy, and I think Georgia made it look a little easy at times too. And I think their schedule probably hurt them. It would have really helped if Georgia played a marquee opponent this year out of conference, or if Georgia Tech had any kind of a heartbeat. But they're such a horrible opponent that they got no credit for playing Georgia Tech, none whatsoever. In fact, some people argued that Oklahoma beating Army was a better win, because Army has 10 or 11 wins this year. Now, if you ask me, Georgia Tech and Army, I'd flip a coin if they played a game tomorrow. Very similar teams. We saw what Georgia did to Georgia Tech. We saw that Oklahoma took overtime against Army. But I think it really hurt Georgia that Georgia Tech stunk so bad that win didn't resonate with anybody, and as I said all year. And I think it hurt also that they played Middle Tennessee State, a bowl team, but a team that doesn't really resonate with anybody. And they played an FCS team in Austin Peay. So maybe had they had a Clemson or a Notre Dame or somebody on their schedule that would have impressed more people, maybe that could have been used as an argument. But as it was, they didn't have that marquee non-conference win. And that's something to keep an eye out for. And that's something that Kirby Smart has talked a lot about, playing better teams, going for the nine-game schedule. I think Kirby Smart's really, really kind of ahead of the game here in some of his ideas.
I think that's interesting, Mike. Let me finish up with this. You mentioned Mel Tucker a moment ago, and you recently wrote an interesting piece at DogNation.com about what your thoughts would be on Kirby Smart's process as he goes about replacing Mel Tucker at defensive coordinator, either with an internal promotion or an outside hire. For the folks who haven't gotten a chance to read that yet at DogNation.com, or maybe your thoughts have been updated here over the last couple of days, where are you in terms of how you view how George is going to go about this process? I don't think it's going to be in a big hurry, because for the bowl game, this defense is well established and well in place, even without Mel Tucker there, and it looks like George is well taken care of on the recruiting trail, because guys like Bakari Rambo, off-field analysts, have kind of stepped in as a recruiting role here. But when it comes, time to finally name the replacement, kind of give us your thought process on how Kirby Smart will go about these deliberations.
Well, first of all, I think it's a very important hire. I think it's not as important as if Jim Chaney were. I think Jim Chaney is the golden goose. I know fans. It's so easy to pick on play callers and point to them, but I think Jim Chaney is truly one of the best in the country. I think Kirby has respect for him over the last few weeks. I heard Kirby, making a lot of compliments to Jim Chaney when he didn't need to, going out of his way to praise him, making sure people understood that Jim Chaney came up with a really good game plan, or Jim Chaney made a really good call. And that's Kirby's way of letting people know how much respect he has for his coaches. And I'm not saying that Jim Chaney is the complete head coach of offense. I don't think he has that much power. I think Kirby gives him parameters to work within. But I think the offensive coordinator is the most important assistant to Kirby Smart on that staff, because I think Kirby does defer more there, certainly, than he does on defense. Now, the reason this coaching hire is important is because this is somebody that's got to work really closely with Kirby. And Kirby is a very, very involved coach. He's not a guy that stands there with his arms crossed and watches from a distance. He's running up, he's yelling, he's screaming, he's getting in people's faces, he's motivating these kids. And he's got to have a coordinator that understands that Kirby Smart is the head coach of the defense, and somebody that thinks like Kirby Smart. And it's got to be somebody that Kirby respects. He respected Mel Tucker. Look at Mel Tucker's resume. My goodness, what an all-star assistant coach Mel Tucker was, with all those years of NFL experience and the ability to work side-by-side with Kirby seamlessly, even as Kirby got that involved in all the drills. So it's hard to bring in an outsider who doesn't speak Kirby language, who doesn't, understand what he's getting. That's why I'm leaning towards it being somebody internal that has worked with Kirby before, that is familiar with Kirby, that knows what they're getting into. Not to say it's a bad job, but you just have to understand you have a very involved head coach working with you as the defensive coordinator and as the secondary coach. And it's somewhat similar to Alabama. This is why a lot of the hires at Alabama are internal on defense. They're promoted from within. It makes perfect sense for Schumann to be promoted and Bakari Rambo to step in. Now, that's not to say that's going to happen. Kirby's going to, I think Kirby will play this out. There's a coaches convention, the 6-2-9. There's a lot of dynamite coaches out there. And if you're looking at this Georgia secondary and you want to buy stock in a position group at Georgia and you want to buy stock on a college football team, let me tell you, that's the place to be because Georgia's going to be real good next year. That secondary is going to be outstanding next year. I think it was already the best in the country this year. I think it's got a chance to be the best in the country again. So that is a golden opportunity for somebody. I think Kirby, like you said, no rush to do it. They've got a staff in place that can handle this. Let things play out. See how things go in bowl prep. If things go smoothly, yeah, maybe Kirby does just promote from within. But you never know who might be out there. I know I mentioned Derek Ansley, and Chip and I talked about it, and we both talked about Derek Ansley, a guy that played at Troy, a guy I talked to last year after the Alabama national championship game with Georgia. I was in the locker room talking with Derek, and I was talking to him about Jeremy Pruitt, because remember, I was covering Tennessee then.
Sure.
But I talked to Derek even beyond that, you know, about some of his aspirations. And so right now he's the secondary coach with the Oakland Raiders. So that would also, you know, kind of stretch out the hire if he's indeed a candidate. Not real sure. He may see the path to head coach going from working with John Gruden as a secondary coach. But you never know. Maybe Kirby talks to him and the money's just as good to make all those recruiting hours worth it, and he sees that as a pathway he wants to go. I'm not real sure. I don't think that's played out yet, because the NFL season is ongoing. So as much as all of us want to know who the next guy is going to be, I think it's a process. I think Kirby's got some ideas. I think he's already got some really good options in place that you've discussed and I just discussed. But I don't think he's going to rule anything out. You know, really smart coaches, they play all their options out. They look at everything before they make a move. And if there's one thing I'll say about Kirby Smart that I've learned this season, B.A., he is thorough. He doesn't miss anything. And so I think this is going to play out, and those are the pieces of the puzzle that I see before me right now.
Mike, that's fascinating stuff. We appreciate you sharing all of that with us. Our really good insight and opinions and information. Look forward to reading a lot more from you coming up soon at DogNation.com as we head towards the Sugar Bowl. And, of course, speaking to you here on Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza again very soon as well. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Brent.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
I tell you, I think Mike is spot on about the whole notion of the 2019 season beginning with the Sugar Bowl. Now, I will also provide one counterexample to that, and gamblers know this, that one of the things that we have a tendency to do wrong in college football a lot of times is use a bowl win one year as a prediction for the future year. You know, a team that wins its bowl game will oftentimes be overranked by the preseason AP poll the following year, and they end up not living up to that. Or, you know, people kind of get involved in either, you know, over under for season win totals or just, you know, straight point spread bets based on what happened to bowl game. Bowl games can be false positives. The reason why I don't think that Georgia falls prey to that, though, is because Georgia's going to be highly ranked no matter what. Georgia could lose 31-3 to Texas. It's still going to be one of the top five, you know, preseason teams in the country probably next year. I mean, Georgia's going to be a very highly rated team, whether it wins or loses to Texas. So Georgia's ranking won't come on the heels of beating Texas, but in terms of really keeping the edge and the proper mindset going into next season, that whole notion of, as we're going to talk about a lot, unfinished business, you know, leaving no doubt in the committee's mind come next December, that does start against Texas. And even though the committee says that won't officially be part of its criteria, you know, listen, these are human beings, you know, prone to, you know, human fallacy here. And my guess is that Georgia can sway some voters for next season by beating up on Texas in on January 1st in New Orleans. We're looking forward to being a part of that with Dog Nation's Sugar Bowl coverage, by the way. Before we move on to our SEC through, let me remind you about a big event taking place today and then tomorrow, depending on where you are. It's Vince Dooley signing copies of his cool new books at Kroger. It's today at the Woodstock Kroger. The address, and I'll give this to you a couple of times, is 2295 Town Lake Parkway. Once again, that's 2295. 2295 Town Lake Parkway today from 4 to 6 p.m. Coach Dooley signing either his book, Dooley, My 40 Years at Georgia, or the newest book, The Legion's Fighting Bulldog. That's today at the Woodstock Kroger. Then tomorrow, if you're up in the north part of the state, Dalton at 1365 West Walnut Avenue, also from 4 to 6 p.m. Once again, 1365 West Walnut Avenue. Coach Dooley there signing books at Kroger. What a cool thing Kroger's doing for the holidays, giving you a chance to meet the legendary former Georgia coach and get a great gift for that Bulldog fan on your list here. Really good stuff from Kroger on that. All right, SEC through time. LSU met with the media yesterday, and a lot of stuff comes up, very similar to what's come up with a lot of SEC programs as of late. That's who is and who is not playing in bowl games. It's already been announced that LSU cornerback Greedy Williams will not play in his team's bowl game, although LSU linebacker Devin White will. Now, White, who could come back to LSU next season, has not made his decision yet about whether or not he plans on doing that, but he is going to play in the Fiesta Bowl against UCF. He doesn't fault Williams for his decision not to play, and for the most part, I've said this over and over again, but these are all business decisions, and you know, I can't fault someone who says, hey, listen, I don't want to put my future and my career in jeopardy. I can't necessarily fault you for that. But as a selfish college football fan, I like the idea that some of these players still think these bowl games matter. I take some comfort in knowing that for guys like Devin White and guys like DeAndre Baker, these games are at least still important to them. One of the things, though, that Baker also said that I think is, boy, this could be really tough for LSU fans if it works out the other way. You know, why in discussing the potential that he might come back, talked about wanting to win a championship for LSU and bring a championship to Louisiana, wanted to be the best linebacker in LSU history. But he also acknowledges that he might still go to the NFL. Can you imagine getting up the LSU fans' hopes that way of, hey, we're going to bring a championship back to Louisiana? On second thought, I better go play in the NFL because I'm going to be a first-round draft pick. I think that's kind of interesting language coming out of LSU as they try to be the SEC team, unlike Auburn a year ago that fell prey to UCF. They try to take care of some business against the Golden Knights, shorthanded in Tempe coming up this bowl season. All right, looks like Alabama, at least according to Football Scoop, may be zeroing in on a new offensive coordinator. Football Scoop is reporting they're just going to promote Dan Enos from within. Enos is a really good coach, and he was a good offensive coordinator at Arkansas, even though the old school stats don't necessarily show how good he really was, but he was a really good coach. It looks like he may just get that promotion. That's pretty much what I expected to happen all the way around. I would also guess that Enos, who was a head coach before becoming Arkansas offensive coordinator, he left the head coaching position at Central Michigan to go be Arkansas OC. This could be a situation where Alabama's having to replace an offensive coordinator again next year. They've gotten really comfortable doing that. My guess is if Enos has the kind of year that you'd expect the Alabama offensive coordinator to have, he may be gone after next season, too. He is certainly a candidate for other head coaching positions, just given what he's done as of late. And by the way, speaking of offensive coordinators, I thought this was weird. The Phil Longo, the Ole Miss offensive coordinator, has left that job to take the same position at North Carolina. Now, this is at best a lateral move, but obviously, you know, it's potentially a bit of a statement about the uneasy situation of the Matt Luke administration there in Oxford and, you know, that coaching staff that had kind of an ugly season, couldn't stop anybody defensively. They did bring in Mike McIntyre to hopefully change that, the ex-Colorado coach. But Longo, whose offense put up big numbers in the SEC this year, going to be a part of Mac Brown's staff at North Carolina. And I guess my overall takeaway here is a couple of things. First of all, there are already some rumors out there that former Ole Miss assistant Dan Werner, who was the quarterback's coach at South Carolina, he may be heading back to the Rebels as offensive coordinator here. But I think this just goes to show you that Ole Miss sets up next season with all the guys that it's losing. This sets up to not be a very good team next year. And right now, the SEC West gives you a couple of those. It gives you Ole Miss. It gives you Arkansas in a way that the SEC East just does not have a doormat. You know, the bad teams, so to speak, in the SEC East, the unranked teams are teams like Vanderbilt, which is going to a bowl. You know, Missouri, which I guess now is ranked and was actually pretty good by the end of the season. You know, Kentucky's like 15th in the country. That's a traditional doormat in the SEC East. Right now, there are no easy outs at all in the SEC East, where there are at least two in the SEC West. So keep that in mind as you're making your 2019 predictions. Who do you get to play from the West, and can you feast on those, a couple of those really bad SEC West teams, because for next season, there are indeed a couple of those. All right, we got a couple more things we're going to do here today on the Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza. A transfer has mentioned Georgia. I will tell you about that. And some of you have requested that I talk about kind of a funny situation coming out of Gainesville, the University of Florida. I will do that. Let me tell you about one more thing before we do. You know, if you're looking for a last-minute Christmas gift for a hard-to-buy-for dog fan, well, you're going to love this brand-new book by a UGA grad named Jeffrey Head. Now, one of the things we like to doing here on a Dog Nation Daily is kind of highlighting some of the great works done by UGA grads. Well, Jeffrey Head is an example of that. This is a terrific stocking stuffer, a brand-new novel. This is a novel from him called Unholy Intentions. It's a book based in Atlanta that's a kind of a about lethal terrorists and the FBI's counterterror team headquartered right here in Atlanta. So it's a great thriller, a great like authentic Atlanta book. The name of the book, once again, is Unholy Intentions. It's available on iBooks or at Nook Book at Barnes & Noble, so make sure you check that out. Unholy Intentions by UGA grad Jeffrey Head, a terrific novel for the holiday season. If you like stories based in Atlanta, if you like terrorist stories and anti-terrorist methods of stopping that, you know, great thrillers like that, Unholy Intentions by Jeffrey Head is the book for you. So check it out there on iBooks or kind of wherever you find books, including our friends at Barnes & Noble. Check out Unholy Intentions there. All right, a couple things to get to here. First of all, a grad transfer tight end leaving Auburn has mentioned Georgia here. Let me show you this message on social media from a tight end here. What's his name again? Jalen Harris, excuse me. Jalen Harris is his name. Has played a little bit each of the last 4 years at Auburn, although did announce in September that he was going to hold back and basically preserve his final year of eligibility. Took the red shirt last year so he could transfer this year. He mentions Vanderbilt, Troy, Kansas State, Colorado, and Georgia as his finalists for transferring here. He's going to be making that decision coming up. This is not a guy that I know a ton about, but the one thing I've talked about a lot on Dog Nation Daily in the past is my belief that when it comes to filling out your roster, filling them out with potential veteran transfers, that has a way of really working out. Now, for Georgia, they've got mixed results on this. Guys like Demetrius Robertson and, Jay Hayes didn't do as much for Georgia this season as some would have expected. But guys like Maurice Smith and JRE were even better than you might have guessed. So it's hard to know where things could go with Harris here, the tight end. But he is a veteran presence. Maybe this is some foreshadowing that maybe Georgia knows what's going to happen with Isaac Nauta, or maybe Georgia's not that involved with him at all. After all, as the Georgia program grows, you're going to see more and more guys mention Georgia as finalists, both heading towards signing day and his transfer destination, just because it's sort of the program to be. But nonetheless, here, as Georgia adds a tight end with its 2019 class from the high school ranks in Rylan Godey, it could be in the mix for a transfer tight end here, and that is certainly worth paying attention to. Let me also mention this. Lloyd Summerall is a defensive end from down in Florida, and he recently took a visit to the University of Florida, and we'll go ahead and fire up our fight song music to kind of close this show out, and we'll get ready to do our Gator Hitter Updater. But a lot of you had seen this picture on social media of Summerall's dad, who gets in the mix with Lloyd on the Florida campus, going full uniform here. And listen, you know, I try to avoid talking about this because I guess I don't want to, make too much fun of this. But it's obviously kind of a weird deal to see the dad in a full uniform next to his son. There's a certain extent to this. This is the kind of thing that seems to only be able to happen at Florida. This is sort of a very University of Florida-centric story. They just seem to have a very different way about going about their recruiting process. I guess here's the one thing I can promise my young son. If he's ever in a position to get a college scholarship, I promise you right now, and I'll hold myself to this 15 years from now, or however many years from now, 11 years from now, I will not dress up in a uniform next to you when you take your recruiting picture. That's my promise to him. By the way, speaking of those lousy, stinking Gators, it's been 774 days since they've beaten Georgia. That's good news. We'll see you tomorrow here on Dog Nation Daily.